Good afternoon, everyone. Hi, I'm Panos Katsambas. I'm a partner at Reed Smith in the London office, heading our alternative investments practice. A big thank you to Nikos and Olga for inviting us all here today. We have a tough act to follow after the latest panel, but hopefully we'll stay away from saying anything about Germany, and then we'll try and probably shed some light into some of the topics that our friend ship owners touched on. I'd like to introduce our panelists. We have Cristóbal Puccelli from Citi, we have Ted Jarrick from DNB, Wally Griffiths from Morgan Stanley, and Paolo Almeida from Tufton Oceanic, so a bit of a mix between investment bankers and private equity. I would like to start with one of the things that Mr. Prokopiou said earlier, basically that the banks must now show that they support the industry, albeit in a bit of a difficult environment. We see a lot of the more traditional shipping lending businesses being shut down, or banks looking to shed NPLs and go into more profitable lines of business. At the same time, the capital markets, for the most part, appear to be closed. Private equity investors, at least of some vintage, are counting losses from exposure in the space. So altogether, it's a bit of a challenging environment. And the first question that I'd like to ask Krista, Ted, and Wiley, in this environment, where can ship owners look for capital? What are the available sources, alternative or otherwise, for them to fund operations and expand their businesses? Krista?
sorry, is this on? This is on. I would say it depends, obviously, on what sector we're talking about within shipping, because obviously there's different sectors and different stages of health, and it depends on the balance sheet of the company. I would say, as a general statement, in today's markets across all sectors, the best place to find capital is your own balance sheet and cash flows, because as you commented at the beginning, the equity markets have been effectively closed. There's been some situations where we've seen new capital coming in, but for the most part, it's only been alongside existing owners recapitalizing balance sheets. So it's been a tough market out there. You know, we've heard from the lending group of banks commenting earlier, bank capital has gotten more difficult to find, but it is still there. And so I would say today, as owners seek other sources of equity, the equity markets will be there, but what they are seeking are companies that have balance sheets that are not too highly leveraged for the environment there that we are in, and an opportunity for equity investors to make returns. And unfortunately, it's challenging for many investors to see that today. We do believe that it will come back, and so the companies that have the ability to withstand the current environment without raising new capital are the best off.
Yeah, I think I would largely agree with that. I mean, most of the time we're spending these days is with clients around recapitalizations or restructuring. It's capital that is coming in for a specific purpose. It's not necessarily coming in as growth capital to take advantage of opportunities that may exist in the market. Different sectors are in different positions, as Krista said, and that will affect the way investors are looking at whether or not they're interested to put money to work. But in the main, we don't see the ship owners who are in a good position don't really seem to be that active for the time being, certainly on the public side. A lot of that is linked to the valuations that they currently have. It's not advantageous or attractive to raise capital at their current valuations. So they're really waiting to see a change in the larger market environment and the way investors are looking at their companies before maybe taking a more proactive view. Other alternatives, you know, the banks seem open, but I think they're certainly fewer that are active. We see more interest in the sale and leaseback product, and particularly Asian sourced money for those types of transactions. So I think there are alternatives, but the regular way capital market activity is not functioning for the time being.
I agree with all of that. I would add that I think since Krista and I at least were up here, in at least on the panel in New York, and I think it was late March, I feel a little better about the equity markets. We're starting to see some follow-on activity, and I think what you have to see first before you get into IPO territory is existing public companies having access to the market and investors doing well in those investments. And so the C-SPAN transaction from a couple of weeks ago is a good example of that. And I think we have to see smaller deals happen a little more frequently in what is a healing equity market with lower volatility. So I think I'm cautiously optimistic about access to capital via the regular way public equity markets. But I think the real question was, you know, what's the alternative to the regular ways, because those sources are diminished right now. I think we will see some emergence of something that's between regular bank debt and the capital markets. You know, we know of a lot of business plans of people who say, I'm going to start a ship lending platform, who aren't commercial banks or regular names, and I think that'll be something that could be interesting. The terms of that debt probably more expensive than what we've seen in traditional ship lending, but I think you may see, whether it's private equity, hedge funds, other institutions like pensions and insurance companies, start to think about, well, there is a funding gap, there's a need for capital there, there's got to be a market clearing price for that, and those instruments will emerge. So I think that's, you know, if the current condition or access to capital or available capital persists, you'll start to see more creative sources of financing.
Thank you. Turning to Paolo and touching on Wiley's last point about potential emergence of hybrid platforms or other lending, let's say, vehicles, how are you approaching as a private equity investor shipping today? We've seen a lot of market reports, and we all are aware of funds losing money by entering or calling the bottom of the cycle perhaps too early, at least in the dry bulk space. Is the private equity industry preparing for shipping version 2.0 today? What are your views?
Thanks, Panos. I think that the way that private equity in general, but certainly what we've been doing at Tufts and Oceanic has been to reassess how we look at the market. Whereas in 2009 was a bit too early, but say 2009 till 2012, the expectation of the industry consensus, I think, was that there would be fairly strong asset recovery, predicated both on cyclical recovery, but also on inflation in shipbuilding prices. I think what we've seen happen since about 2012, 2013, is one, that asset price increases are not something that anyone should any longer expect as a central case when looking at shipping. We've seen new building prices very much under pressure. New building prices, especially when lead time for ordering vessels is, say, 12 to 18 months, that's going to provide a lid on asset price recovery for secondhand vessels. So that's a big change. Touching on what the investment bankers said as well, although we at Tufton never predicated a transaction on an IPO exit, I think anyone that did expect an IPO exit for a shipping portfolio up until 2013 or 2014 should have resigned themselves to the fact that that's not going to be likely in the next 2 or 3 years. Be happy to be pleasantly surprised otherwise, but I think that's a major change as well. So what we've been doing is to match investors, very long-term investors who are seeking alternative sources of yield, so not high-yield bonds, not real estate, but have been looking at other sectors, shipping being one, where asset values on some measures are cheap. You're certainly never going to hear me say that asset values are very cheap now and they're not going to get cheaper, because it's almost certain that next week at least some assets will be cheaper. So we at Tufton never predicate a transaction on assets values not becoming lower. But we have been matching investors who are looking for long-term sources of yield outside of real estate, timberland, and those sorts of assets, and putting them into shipping where cash flows actually are quite attractive in most sectors other than dry bulk at the moment. Even in decent container ship transactions, you can get yield today. In terms of private equity 2.0, I'm not so sure about that. What we can be certain of is that there will be more private equity activity than today, sometime in the next couple of years, but today there's approximately zero other than specialists like ourselves, so that's almost certain to increase. But I don't think we're going to see anywhere near the activity that we saw a couple of years ago, and we should hope not. Especially, we should hope not that there won't be a lot of new builds ordered in most sectors, because demand prospects are quite poor.
Thank you. I wanted to touch base with the bankers and see how is the investing public perceiving shipping today. I mean, are they open to investing in good companies? Are they expecting changes? What is the perception from your audience that we can give a flavor to this audience in terms of how the investors are looking at the space? Krista, you want to start?
Sure. I think one thing that has been consistent over the past decade in the capital markets for shipping has been this is a sector that is a smaller cap sector than other areas of the public markets. And so, similar to shipping being cyclical, we have also seen the institutional investor base be cyclical as well. We're always seeking for that holy grail of the long-only investors who are coming into the sector. Unfortunately, what we have seen is many investors who were backing the sector well until the end of last year have pulled out. So we're seeking new sources of investors who may want to come in, those with an energy angle. You know, with commodity prices being volatile over the last 12 to 18 months, that's been a challenge as well. But now that oil has started to stabilize, you have started to see some energy investors coming back into the fray. So I do think that as we see some recovery generally, you will see those investors looking at shipping as well. But we have to see the rest of the market recover first. What I would say is for shipping to attract capital in a more sustainable way, investors are looking for companies that are sustainable. We've heard the theme from many of the other panelists about companies being larger. Mr. Procopiou, in response to one of the questions earlier, talked about building a company of over 100 vessels that was here to stay, not just a trading company here to sell assets. And so financial investors don't have a 10-year horizon. They have a much shorter term horizon. They're looking to get in and out. And so I'd say the new class of investors are looking to back those companies who are going to be growing, who are going to be consolidating, and who will provide investors the opportunity to be trading in and out with the cyclicality of the business.
Thank you. Ted, I mean, is there a preference between investors in today's market between sort of the more traditional equity investing or any fixed income products within this sector?
I wouldn't say that. I think the cloud over shipping from an investor's point of view, in my opinion, is with the exception of the dry bulk sector. But when you look at the tanker sector and the product sector, sectors that are performing well and have a good outlook, in my view. And yet the valuations have been under pressure. Most of the companies, if not all, are trading below net asset value. And that's really, I think, holding back a lot of the market activity that one might otherwise expect. Investors have been very clear that they would like to see cash returned in the form of dividends. So I think the companies you've seen in that sector have been responsive to that, so they've been increasing their payouts. I think going forward, it is very much about scale. and size. Investors want liquidity in what they're buying. They, as Krista said, they don't have a 10-year perspective. They have a short-term perspective. They want to be able to move in and out of positions with relative ease. And they want strong management teams that show a commitment to market leading practices, whether it's practices in terms of how they run their ships, or it's practices in terms of how they run the companies from a governance point of view.
I'd like to touch on the last point and ask why, if from the starting back from, let's say, 2004, 2005, and looking at the typical structure and corporate governance of a listed shipping company, would you advise similar principles to be followed today, or do we see that the public is asking for any changes in the traditional governance model that the listed shipping companies have?
I would say that from a governance perspective and a structure perspective, listed companies and the IPOs have kind of evolved. So if you go 2004 to present, I think every time there was a wave of IPOs, you would see governance that was reflected what the investor wanted. And so I think the 2004 companies were different than the 2014 companies or what have you. I think the basic principles still exist, which is align the interests of the investors with the interests of the founders and the management team, and make sure that we're all working towards one goal and that the economics are really for the appreciation of the equity value of the company. I think just to add on to what Krista and Ted were talking about in your question about new investors, my short answer is I don't know what the new investors are going to look like. To Krista's point, a lot of people, I felt like I had a great line of sight on who the investors investing in our deals were for about the last 5-6 years. A lot of those people are no longer at those funds, or those funds have been burned so badly they're not going to invest again in shipping for a while. And so one encouraging sign is we're starting to see the Fidelities and the Wellingtons and some of the bigger funds invest in shipping because it's a value play. That the good news is they're coming in, the bad news is it's a value play because valuations are so low. But that's where it all has to start. And so I think my view of who's going to invest in shipping and what do they want is still evolving, because I don't know who's going to be investing into shipping as we come into this next chapter, but it feels like it's the right names, and they'll let us know what they want. But I think the general principles apply that an investor wants to make some money, the ship owners and the management teams want to make some money, align the interests and focus on a great team. The people at Fidelity and Wellington and large institutions are excellent at evaluating management teams, and the structure is just kind of what comes around the management team. So it's really just being in the right place at the right time, and I'm optimistic about who's going to invest in shipping kind of in the next generation.
We heard earlier Mr. Marinaki say the importance in his view on charters perceiving that the ship owner controls the technical and the commercial management of the fleet. Is from an investor's point of view, would you consider that to be equally important, or do you think investors would have a preference for structures that management is given to a third-party technical manager, or vessels are placed in a pool? Any thoughts on that, Ted?
I think the preference is certainly always going to be an integrated management setup is the preferred setup from an investor point of view. That being said, I think from a commercial perspective, pooling arrangements can be productive, can be beneficial, and I don't think investors would look at those in a negative way. And there are certainly companies there which outsource the technical management as well. So I think investors are relatively practical when it comes to those kinds of questions. Again, I think inherently, if we're talking about companies that are going to be most attracted to investors being really the long-term companies that are focused on building a business over a period of time, and that to me speaks to having the management in-house. And the less distractions there are, the less things that investors have to kind of check into when it comes to third-party arrangements, the better.
We heard earlier also a comment about the private equity investors in tankers and the difficulties they're facing in terms of exiting with capital markets being closed and a sale to another shipping group not being really viable based on where the pricing is. While you what would you advise someone who's looking for an exit in today's environment? Should they simply wait? Are there any other alternatives?
I think the and Paula said it well. I think the investment thesis that you're going to exit with an IPO is not actionable in the foreseeable future. I don't like saying that because I'm an investment banker. I obviously want to be talking about IPOs, but I think from a reality check perspective, when we're, for example, trying to raise private capital for owners because the public market shut, the exit is usually sell the ships, or else add leverage, or as I was mentioning earlier, look for alternative sources of capital. One dialogue we're having with investors these days, which I would call kind of quasi-private equity, quasi-hedge funds, is I understand there's a big funding gap. What I want to protect against is total loss, and so having downside protection in a more structured instrument is something that I might invest in, as opposed to I'm just going to put straight equity in. And so I think as people think about exit, they're firstly thinking about asset values, and then thinking about what those asset values are going to be in the future, and applying financial engineering as opposed to, as Paulo said, just thinking, assuming that asset values are going to appreciate and that there's going to be no real depreciation. And so I think everybody's base exit strategy at this point is I'm going to operate this company and I'm going to have a realization of cash flows plus the sale value of the vessels. I'm not necessarily going to have a 25-30% premium when I take the company public. I think Krista and Ted and I all hope that will reemerge and as soon as possible. But any model that we're looking at with an investor when we're trying to pitch a good team and a good company and a good business plan has got them selling the ships in a trade sale or for scrap, depending on the age of the ships.
I would also add in today's market that somebody who has a fleet and they're looking to exit, taking a more serious look on if they can accept shares in another existing listed company. And there's challenges to that, perhaps more challenges in this industry than in other industries. You have to have alignment in terms of views on relative value and alignment in terms of corporate governance. But I do think that in a market where raising new capital is constrained, there can be significant shared upside for an owner who is willing to have their fleet be acquired with stock.
Paulo, how do you view the exit strategy from your perspective, both in terms of past investments and in terms of how you're assessing new opportunities? What do you tell your investors when they ask you in terms of how you will realize their investment made?
Well, we have a fairly diverse set of investors along the lines of the point I made earlier that if we look for sort of 4 to 6 years ago, the focus was on capital appreciation and very possibly in an upside case only, not in a base case, to have an IPO exit. That is a fairly different discussion than one around assets that we've been acquiring over the past 3 years for pension funds who are happy under Tufton to own ships for 10, 12 years. And that's basically the premise that they're going into investing with us. So in terms of our more recent investments where we have a fairly diverse portfolio, including now 7 tankers, 2 Suezmaxes and 5 chemical tankers, we just expect to own those for 7 to 10 years. We may expect to scrap the crude oil tankers at 20 years and everything else at 25 years, even if that's 5 years short of a good scenario. And we just expect to own them. If values reach the point where the investment banking clients are looking for IPOs, then we're all for exiting certain assets then. In terms of older vintage investments, of course, that discussion, honestly, of course, is a little bit different. It's public knowledge, for example, that we are a quite significant investor in Hafnia and helped put together Hafnia back in 2000 and late 2013. With capital markets being closed, the focus is on getting cash out of the company. That's all fairly public knowledge in terms of what Hafnia has been doing, and we're very happy together with our partners in that asset to run the company, keep an efficient capital structure, and see how we can manage capital reasonably well. And that's working out to be a good investment, even though there may not be an exit for quite a while. That can work as well. The problem is if you need an exit, that's the real problem. If you ever put yourself in a position where you do need an exit, that's never a good situation to be in shipping.
Let's educate also a bit of the audience here in terms of some of the funds and the term that you have in your own vehicles and the investors, and as they're looking, at least some ship owners, for potential partnerships, et cetera. How does a private equity fund assess that issue when it comes near the final term of the fund, whether it's a seven-year fund, you might get an extension. What do you do and how do you approach a strategic relationship? Yes, you can sort of manage it in advance not to get there, but if you're there, you know, how do you go about it?
Well, I mean, I can answer for what we do and what I know others, mainstream private equity firms do when they get in the same situation. A typical private equity fund will have a fixed life. Some of ours happen to be 5 to 7, others have 10 to 12. In that 5 to 7 period, much like maybe a charter where the option is for the charter to extend, the option to extend the life of a fund for the first couple of years is at the discretion of the manager. So when we start with a 5 to 7 year fund, given it's shipping again, what we'd like to do is to make investments where we would expect to start exiting in year 4. Because we know we'll need a bit of runway. So one thing is to do that, but that doesn't answer your question, because your question was more around what do you do afterwards. First of all, if you communicate well with your investors, they should be there to extend the fund past those 7 years. That is up for an investor vote. And I think what the general practice has been in private equity, and there's some literature or research on this, is that private equity investors, pension funds, university endowments, et cetera, the evidence is that those investors tend to back the manager's choices to extend the funds, other than in cases where they believe that the manager is just doing it to keep his fee stream. So if you make a good case, the investor is there, and hopefully what you have to extend past that 7 years will also be a small proportion of the fund and not the whole fund.
We touched earlier, I think Ted mentioned about the work being done on recapitalizing existing companies, and I wanted to address first with Ted, but then hear Christos and Wiley's views. Do you see in the market a need for consolidation? I mean, we heard earlier that especially the dry bulk market is fragmented. Would consolidation be one way to turn around the demand and supply factors?
I think my opinion is, and I think my colleagues would share it, I mean, consolidation via traditional merger and acquisition activity, in shipping it doesn't happen that often. There are a number of reasons for that, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't happen. I mean, it happens practically in other ways by asset sale and purchase in the secondhand market. And do I think consolidation can help going forward, managing supply and demand? Is that part of the question?
Yep.
Yes, I think, look, depending on the sector, I think it can help, but at the end of the day, as several of the panels earlier pointed out, shipping still is quite a fragmented industry, more so in some segments than others. I think in the tanker market, you've got a reasonable semblance of an organized market. In the dry bulk market, I think you have quite the opposite. So many, many more challenges there. Pools can help in part, and there again, I think that's one of the reasons why I feel the tanker market is a little bit better organized. There are some strong, well-established pools there that that function in a good way. So, traditional M&A, I don't really see. I think you saw an example of the transaction last year where Principal Maritime chose to sell their fleet to TK. So there's a private equity-owned fleet that had ambitions to go public. The IPO market wasn't there. They were too small. So they sold to an existing company that was obviously in a position to raise equity at the time and pay for the company. But you know, again, the traditional kind of M&A activity in shipping is not something that at least I would hang my hat on going forward.
Yeah, I agree with Ted. I think as an investment banker, it's always frustrating because you want to be doing M&A as well as much as you're doing underwriting, and the real advisory work that's going on these days is probably more restructuring and advice around how to manage your balance sheet. It's really fragmented, and so the S&P brokers do a terrific job of kind of moving assets around in the industry, and so it's got to be a very specific either sector or reason for companies to come together. I don't think there's a whole lot of industrial or kind of corporate finance logic to taking two fleets and putting them together. You may take out some of the salaries or overhead costs, but that's about it. The reality is there's lots of vessels out there, lots of companies, lots of different strategies. It would be nice if some of the smaller owners or management teams came together, and instead of competing with each other by trying to grow, whether it's pressure from the public markets or their own ambitions, and have a little more discipline around the fleet. But I think that's just a dilemma that the industry will always face.
I agree with what my colleague said in terms of the challenges and that it is unlikely. However, the one thing that I would just add is that I do think that once you reach a certain size, irrespective of sector, the industrial logic of combining may not be there, but I do think that we will continue to see differentiated access to capital for the larger companies. And so whether they achieve that organically or whether they achieve that through consolidation is still to be seen. No doubt there are more hurdles in this sector than others, but I think that the benefits as we go forward are real, and the cost of capital for the smaller companies will end up being more expensive over time.
Trying to put our innovator's hat on, do you see the possibility of any new product becoming available for the shipping industry? I mean, in other real estate or even in aviation, you have more securitizations, other type of more structured finance. Do you see shipping being open potentially to any new ideas in the coming years? Krista, you want to start with that?
Sure. We've seen securitization in some of the leasing sectors, so the container leasing sector as an example. And we do think that there's applicability of those structures. I think that, as the markets have evolved, one hindrance to the development of significant new product in shipping has been the abundance of capital from traditional ship lenders. And we all know that that's changed, but that is still there. And so as you start to think about new debt solutions, whether that's preferred equity, whether that's private placements with security against assets, all these things are there and available. The reality is that, since ships are bigger assets than other kinds of assets that are securitized, you have to have a certain size and scale and assets coming together to give investors the diversity that they want. But, these are things that are there and are available more typically in the asset classes that have, I would say, contracts and an element of stability behind their cash flows.
I think the latter point is the key there, whether you talk about a securitization or a private placement on the back of a long-term charter or the MLP model, which a number of shipping companies, or at least some shipping companies, have used to diversify their sources of capital. The common element there is long-term contracted cash flow with relatively high-quality charter parties.
Yeah, I would just add, so anything with a charter, there's going to be alternative financing sources, whether it's project finance or ABS-like products. And of course, the other thing of value to a lender or an investor is the ship as a collateral. And so finding a structure where you can divide up the claims on those ships in a more creative way and package that up, I think is something that would be innovative and is would be a welcome source of capital, and I think is something that we're all considering with our colleagues and working on.
Last question for all of you before we turn it to the audience. 2 years from now, hopefully Nicholas will invite us again. And we're sitting at the same panel, and I'm asking you for your opening remarks in terms of what transpired the two past years. Paolo?
I think I would expect that 2 years from now, we would be in a situation where, not necessarily just for the shipping industry, but for the global economy generally, that we are in a reasonable situation in terms of macroeconomic and geopolitical risks that puts us in a position where the markets are open enough generally that shipping IPOs start becoming feasible in the next 1 or 2 years from, so say, 3 to 4 years from now. I think we'll also see that there was limited private equity and hedge fund, especially participation in the shipping industry, hopefully for the first one of those 2 years, and then that will pick up a little bit ahead of potentially public capital markets opening up for the benefit of these guys, but also as a signal that the shipping industry and, again, the geopolitical situation is good. And hopefully we'll have seen that there were very few new builds ordered during those 2 years as well, because that'll be good for everyone, other than the shipyards. Sorry.
I was just going to add, we've heard a lot of owners come up here on panels and send out the message to not order new builds. And so I think if all the owners stick to that, we will be in a much healthier market for raising new capital in 2 years than we are today.
I would think in 2 years we will have moved through this downturn in the energy price. That will have begun to work its way through. I think we'll have worked our way through the current bump in the tanker order book that at least has some people concerned. The tanker market is as I alluded to earlier, is in my opinion, has been very much caught up in the malaise around the energy sector for reasons which at least I don't fully understand, because it seems intuitive that the lower the oil price, the more oil is consumed, so the more oil is shipped. And I think that's been happening. But now I think maybe investor concern has shifted a little bit more to the order book. I think in 2 years we'll be in a better place around the tanker sector. I think we'll be in a better place around the LNG sector. And I think both of these are sectors which investors like, they understand. And if the more macro situation is maybe a little bit more settled than at least I see it as today, I think we'll be in a better environment for IPOs, maybe just within those two sectors.
Wiley, any final remarks?
Yeah, I would just add two things. I think I feel like 2 years from now, we will have seen a period of more discipline just because there is a lack of capital. That just kind of will force the issue. And we'll see kind of a comp set in the public space among the equities that are just larger, stronger companies, which should, in theory, attract capital when capital's comes back and is available. I think 2 years from now, we probably are at the beginning of the opening of the IPO market, if I had to guess it. I hope it comes sooner. And in terms of what happens and what's driving things, Ted's mentioned all the things we have our eye on. There's always something in a two-year period we don't predict. And hopefully it's a positive shock, and that helps us all.
Do we have time? Any questions from the audience?
What's the
question? Yeah, sure, Mr. Sachs, I think.
Okay.
Well, again, thank you very much, and we are looking forward to the next 2 years, all of us. But since you're all, most of you reside, although not all of you vote, but you reside on the other side of the Atlantic, what would you think would be the effect of a Trump victory for the equity markets? No, this is not a joke. Usually when Republicans are elected, the stock exchange has a positive view. Do you expect this to be the case if in November you have Trump?
I'm Canadian.
Look, that's one of the big wild cards out there. I can't say more than that, because I personally would be appalled if he were elected president, and I have no idea what he would do if he were. So that's one of the big uncertainties that I think is hanging over, increasingly hanging over the market now, as the market perceives that as a potential reality. Sorry, I can't be more definitive.
Krista, you want to add anything to that?
I'm happy to talk privately about my views.
Okay, well, thank you all. Have a great week. Thank you.